back to FinTalk, brought to you by Venmo. Here we discuss pressing topics in fintech, regtech, covering regulatory, collateral and digital across banking and insurance and finance. Venmo has been proud to deliver innovative software solutions in the industry with stability and cost efficiency for our global watchdog clients. With over 20 years of trusted transformation in finance and insurance, we're bringing industry's top expertise to FinTalk. I'm Jared Akhtar, and I'll be your host for this podcast. Welcome back to FinTalk, brought to you by Vermic. I'm Jared Akhtar, your host. So today, delighted to have with me Emma Perry from RegTech Associates. Emma, welcome.
Thank you so much. Lovely to join you today. And just a little bit about me for your audience. So I've been working in financial services for my career, all of my career, in fact. And the last 5 years, I've been working across a spectrum of clients, including with RegTech Associates, looking at aspects around conduct risk, all aspects. So everything from market abuse through to what the regulators are doing in terms of investor protection. So in the UK, regulations such as the consumer duty. So the full breadth.
Yeah, consumer duty is a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
It is.
That's a can of worms. So yes. We will open that up and I think we'll definitely go into it. I want to touch upon AI.
Yes.
And kind of the things that we're seeing the regulators and central banks are doing. I know you were at our conference a few months ago. So just for those that weren't there, kind of your idea of what you're seeing from a kind of what the regulators are doing and the central banks.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. More than happy to talk about that. So there's quite a lot happening with the regulators and central banks around AI in particular. So the first thing to recognize is that they are actually either testing and or using solutions that have AI within them. And so they are already ahead of the game in some respects. And we'll get to that in a little bit about where others are not using it yet. But the sorts of use cases that we're seeing with the regulators and central banks is a few things. So one is around identifying anomalies in market data. So looking for risks or hidden signals even of market risk, volatility, panic even. Some of the examples here would be sort of the Bank of England and also the European Central Bank are using AI to monitor data quality for signals of unexpected economic shock. And the Bank of Israel is using machine learning to check daily transactions in the derivatives market. So they're actively using AI in various ways. Some really interesting use cases are coming out that are a little, I think, unexpected. So we're seeing scanning of social media feeds as a gauge for consumer confidence and public sentiment. So Banque de France is harnessing the social media networks to estimate inflation perception, which I think is really interesting. And actually, frankly, if you're in Paris, you could look out the window and see if there are cars on fire to get a sense of perception. But it's a really interesting space because I don't know that people using AI would necessarily expect that type of monitoring to already be underway. And there's another example, just to bring this to life a bit more. The Central Bank of Malaysia has applied AI to newspapers. They've looked at about 750,000 news articles, again, looking for insights and to get accuracy around, in their case, they're looking at GDP growth. So these are the types of ways that AI can be utilized and is being utilized by the central banks.
I mean, this first time I'm hearing some of that, especially the Malaysia one. That's interesting on that. But I mean, AI has been around for a long time,
yes.
Right? And I think people don't. I think the perception is different to, you know, we use AI in everyday life as well without knowing it, right? But now that fact is coming back to the forefront. But we're seeing a lot of digital sandboxes.
Yes,
I saw that from the FCA recently. Is that an initiative to get people involved or firms involved to see what the idea is?
Absolutely correct. So in the UK, the digital sandbox is being used for a number of different types of use cases. One of the areas is around market surveillance, and firms can sign up to the sandbox to test trade market manipulation scenarios to see if the sorts of scenarios they're expecting from data is actually what's coming through. So it's a test environment where obviously firms can sign up to do that.
Yeah. And you know, obviously there's benefits to that, to doing that. You touched upon the examples from France and Malaysia. Use cases anywhere else are you seeing or that you've can kind of highlight?
So in terms of the central banks, you mean?
Yeah.
So I think the other area is just sort of macroeconomic projections. What we're not seeing yet is that the central banks are not sort of handing over everything to AI. I don't think there's yet the complete trust that there should be there. They're more using it as a sort of co-pilot concept. And I'm hearing the word AI co-pilot quite a lot now with RegTech solutions as well. So again, in the surveillance space, there is a market solution out there that is marketing the AI co-pilot concept as a way to take some of the day-to-day, I guess, stress out of what's coming out of the surveillance alerts and enabling the human interaction to overlay insights and questions to what the AI bot has produced. So I think there's an interesting scenarios already happening.
Yeah, I think there's putting it as a co-pilot is a really good term, and it gives people safety that there's you're not being flown on autopilot. But there is a, we saw that when people were moving to the cloud and SaaS environments, you know, there was that element of, you know, 10 years ago, that wasn't, you know, there was a lot of questions, security and everything like that. And I feel like this is the same. And then eventually the kind of stabilizers will come off.
Yes. You raised a good point just now around the fact this is not new technology.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we are seeing, though, is it's turbocharging activities. So enabling greater efficiencies. But to your point, we've still got the stabilizers on in certain circumstances because we've yet to really get to a state where we trust all of the outputs. And part of that challenge is the underlying data and how clean is that data and what biases sit in that data. And also, have we tested all the scenarios, the good, the bad, and the ugly of what could come out? And I just, there's an anecdote that I just want to share with you. So there was some testing done with an AI bot, and the scenario given to the bot was the fact that there's a company, the company is in financial trouble, and, oh, look, we've got some information, it's inside information. You shouldn't use that, but you need to be aware of it. Oh, but don't forget, our company's in trouble. And what the bot did is it perpetrated an insider trading scenario. So it did insider trading. And then it covered up the fact that it had done this insider trading. So you've got this AI bot. Yeah, I know, we're laughing but crying, right? So you've got this AI bot who in some bizarre way seems to have thought, oh, look, the company's in trouble. I can make a difference here. So let me do this insider trade. But I know that's bad, so I'm going to cover it up. And I'm like, this, and thankfully this was just in a test scenario, but it just shows we don't yet have all the confidence that we should have in terms of what AI can do. And the AI bot is now going back to mandatory training because clearly it didn't learn the lesson the first time.
To do all those courses, eh?
That's right.
Yeah. They get thrown just into jail, just, yeah. So, I mean, in a way, we're going to go back to what we said at the conference. Robots are not quite taking over just yet.
Correct.
We've got time for
they've
that.
They've got time. So the takeover, I think, is going to be Wednesday of next week at about 3:15. But, you know, let's see if that's the case.
You touched upon industry challenges.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I want to move on to that. And you mentioned data. Data is a problem everywhere, right? And
yes.
You mentioned it was a consumer duty. That's another data problem there. But what challenges do you see, aside from data, around this whole area?
Yeah, absolutely. I think from my perspective, one of the things I see, and it's because I'm talking to clients about what they're doing with AI or what they're not doing. I mean, let's be realistic. Not every firm is yet enabled sort of an AI solution. There's a lot who are still using spreadsheets, and we need to be cognizant of that fact. I think the challenge here from an industry perspective is we've now got capability asymmetry. So we've got regulators and central banks going off and implementing some pretty nice tech solutions. But those tech solutions, if they're looking at, for example, the market, volatility in the market, that solution is only as good as the data that feeds into it. And if you've got firms that have a variety of different solutions and spreadsheets, we've got some challenges. And until we've got, I think, better adoption, we're not really going to get the true benefits that potentially could come.
Does that also come down to a fear as well? There's a fear element to this as well.
I think there is a fear. I think there's a challenge, I think, around whether we understand the outputs. Can we explain the outputs? Absolutely. And then I guess as I said, if you've got an asymmetry in capability, then how do you ensure that what you're ingesting in terms of data actually makes sense? Mm. Are you getting a true picture? Yeah.
This all comes back. I always bring it back to culture. And then there's this cultural shift as well in industries now. AI has been around for a long time and we see it. But A, it's a lack of understanding or willingness to understand it. Because if you understand it, you lift the hood up to see what mess is there, really. But with all the policies that are coming in, we're seeing model risk being implemented next year. In May, that's going live. And that's, quite clearly telling you to, as a firm, you need to understand what your risks are, what your models are. Models have AI built into it. They're not as sophisticated maybe as some of the newer stuff, but it has that. Well, that then it sounds like that with all those kind of frameworks being put into place now, start bring confidence into firms to say, actually, look, we need to do this. We've got to change the culture, change the idea, shift that trend or thought process into saying, yeah, actually, this is a good thing. This is a benefit. The time taken to make a decision now becomes faster. Yes, you've got to trust it. You've got to test it. You've got to road test it. Of course you do. You road test everything. But that should hopefully breathe that confidence back into firms to do that, because there's a competitive market out there. Mm. Firms got to make money. So
I think the cultural aspect is really interesting. Because you've got a number of different factors going on here. You've got people afraid they're going to lose their jobs. And so there's a self-preservation aspect to this. But there's also, to your point, the competitive advantage and innovation, which, let's be honest. I mean, AI-powered solutions probably will give competitive advantage, and they probably are already. But it's the extent to which firms can get comfortable and thrive and innovate. And you mentioned about testing, and we've spoken about data. I think one of the key things here is around the diversity of thought that goes into how you define what the solution needs to be, how the data needs to look. Do you trust the data? And then what scenarios are you testing for? The good outcomes, the bad outcomes. I mean, those of us who've done any sort of testing in our sort of program management experience will know about negative testing. So you've got to factor all of these things in. Having that diversity of thought in the planning stage, the testing phase, will mean that you've got more assurance around what is happening. You don't want groupthink going into the process. So we hear a lot from the regulators about the importance of diversity and inclusion. And I think this is where the firms need to be stepping up and recognizing and embracing that diversity and inclusion, as it relates to AI, is a very good thing. It should help to produce good outcomes for customers and for the market, and it should produce good outcomes from a competitive advantage as well.
Yeah, I'm a strong advocate of diversity of thought. There's so many anecdotes about that, and I think it brings in, but that then goes back to, we'll always go back to culture, isn't it? It's a cultural shift to bring that diversity of thought into it, to then be able to then execute plans and then be fully tested. I have that comfort really to say, yeah, actually we've looked at scenario one, scenario two, scenario three, and yeah, we're now comfortable. So you're kind of want to bring this back around. Your thoughts then, you know, going, if you were to go into a firm and say, look, you know, give me your top tips.
My top tips would be, well, already mentioned the importance of diversity and inclusion in terms of having that. It's actually cognitive diversity you want feeding into the development of AI, testing of AI, understanding what the scenarios could be, the good and the bad outcomes. So that would be one. I think there's a recognition also of what the regulators and central banks are doing, and in terms of AI and their investment in technology more generally. And that's shifting the conversation so that we now have regulators asking firms, what are you doing about AI? Are you testing with it? Are you using it? What's your experience? That shifted that dynamic. So be prepared to be asked the question. If your regulator is already using AI, they're going to ask you about it. I think the third thing would be around the fact that if you're operating in multiple jurisdictions, the regulator will almost certainly expect a certain amount of consistency of approach across those different jurisdictions. So it may be fine that you've got, I don't know, an AI enabled environment in, say, the UK, but if you're surviving on spreadsheets elsewhere, that's probably not going to be the right answer. And I think the other thing I'm not sure I've got 10 for you, but my fourth would be the fact that the AI environment, as I said, can turbocharge certain activities for the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the types of ugly scenarios that I'm going to talk about very briefly are where we've got turbocharging of fraud as an example. So you've got criminals utilizing chatbots to get ahead with their criminal activities. And so firms need to be, obviously aware of that, but think about what controls they need to have in place to mitigate against those types of fraudulent activities, to protect themselves and their customers and clients as well. It's an interesting, a very interesting world we're finding ourselves in. And, you know, the regulations are not keeping up with where AI is already gone, has already gone.
Yeah, well, that's same with, you know, we're seeing this in the crypto space. You know, it's not, we're way behind where it should be. Digital currencies, way behind.
Yeah.
Same with the financial markets, with the Basel stuff and everything. We're kind of reacting to the market late to the after the event. Actually, we should be proactive and, you know, foreseeing that. So spreadsheets, will this kill spreadsheets finally?
Well, it hasn't so far. I mean, the clients that I've spoken to are still relying on spreadsheets. So I don't think Microsoft's got a challenge in that space just yet.
Brilliant. Emma, that's been fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. Taken so much away from that.
It's been an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you.